Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Okay, folks, welcome to the latest edition, latest episode, latest chapter, call it what you will, of Life on Planet Porky. First thing I want to say is thank you very much indeed for all the feedback we are getting continually from the Planet Porky podcast. We're delighted that you're all getting so involved. If you want to get to me personally, Planet Porky Pod, it's a Gmail address. It's Planet Porky Pod. Actually, I forgot what it is. .com? Yeah, that must be it. PlanetPorkyPod.com, probably .uk. I don't know, but you'll work it out anyway. It's a Gmail address. Now, I'm delighted to welcome back into the studios here at Planet Porky Towers the one and only Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be back.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. It is indeed. And we're going to talk about what particular events have taken place in your life in a pod or two's time. But for now, I want to talk to you about two people who really are in the spotlight and controversy swirling about their heads in all sorts of directions. I am talking, of course, about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Now, you have probably uniquely in the history of Fleet Street come up alongside, rubbed shoulders with, enjoyed the company of, observed the habits of some very, very famous people during your time. And I suppose everybody acts differently when they're in the public spotlight. So, first of all, did you ever have any royal reporting in your repertoire?
Occasionally, by default, really. You know,
yes.
One would happen to be in the right place at the right time, or, from their point of view, the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yes, that's right.
The man who became my only ever ex-husband actually crashed into Princess Diana's Jag at Old Street Roundabout several years ago.
Really?
And he was advised by the security guys in the car with her on the day to get lost, to go into hiding. And he actually, terrified, drove down to Somerset and hid away in a friend's barn for about 6 weeks.
Really?
Because he was afraid that somebody was going to come for him.
What do you mean, come for him?
She was driving, and she was actually... Well,
did she have a detective in the car?
She had two detectives in the car, but she was driving.
Yes.
She was over the limit.
No.
She was over the limit.
You're joking.
No,
over the drink drive limit.
That was why the crash occurred.
That's a brilliant story.
And that was why he was told to get lost.
Good God.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any royal connections reporting-wise or anything himself?
Prior to that, no.
No.
I said the same as you. It's a brilliant story. I want to write this.
Yeah,
you write this and I'll divorce you. Divorce me anyway.
Yeah.
Boss. Oh, well, I won't say that.
You can, please. This is Planet Porky.
The bastard.
That's right.
They're all bastards, as my mother would say.
Yeah.
But I did have a mole in the palace.
Right.
Wonderful lady called Sally Osman, who you might remember from Fleet Street.
Mm.
The stories about Sally having been fired from Buckingham Palace were completely untrue.
Right.
She stepped down. She was working personally for the two princes.
Okay.
She couldn't take it anymore. She'd had enough.
Oh, the two young princes?
Yes, Harry and William. I think
What age were they?
Oh, this is quite recent.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there was dissent, you know, bubbling under quite some time ago. This is not a new thing, Harry and William having fallen out.
No.
And I think they're quite demanding in their separate ways.
Well, I think as they grew up, their behavioural patterns did definitely start to move apart, you know what I mean?
And they have their mother in them.
Yes.
They both have the fire of their mother in them, and nothing wrong with that.
No.
But it does make for a demanding royal.
Yes, it does, yeah. Well, all royals are demanding to other people because of the unique bubble in which they live. Now, getting to this one, I did a bit of TV yesterday and day before, and it doesn't matter which TV chat show you're on at the moment, it's all about Meghan and Harry. And there is a division as to whether or not, once again, the wicked tabloid press, you know, putting too much pressure on them, or my view, my alternative view, is that I'm afraid they bring it all upon themselves And Meghan, who was an A-lister Hollywood star, simply can't avoid the limelight, wants to get in there. And in my view, my own personal view, which I haven't heard anybody else express, the pressure that Prince Harry is under at the moment is nothing to do with public exposure. It's about him being bent and shaped by his Hollywood wife and having to try and do that within the confines of his family. Comment, please.
Well, as you know, I was the first until relatively recently to defend both Meghan and Harry.
Yep.
I felt, you know, why are people saying hashtag 5 years? Mm. Why do people want this marriage to break up? Do they want her to leave him and go scuttling off back to Hollywood with Archie the baby?
Yeah.
Now, why would anybody want that? Especially given what happened to his mother.
Well, who's harassing him?
Well, she made a very big mistake this past week.
Yes.
By saying that a friend had advised her not to marry into the royal family.
Yes.
And I switched sides at that point. I thought, no. So there's a very big difference between being a royal, a member of the royal family, and being a celebrity.
Yeah.
You are not a celebrity if you're a member of the royal family in this country, and that is the bottom line.
Yes.
So if she wants to be a celebrity, if she needs her global fame, which it sounds like she does need, you know, first of all, don't move to Africa, because you're not going to boost your career chances or prospects there, are you?
No.
So the only place for her is Hollywood, really.
Yeah.
And somebody has commented this week, have they not, that if they did move to Africa, they would have to relinquish their royal titles.
Well, the father's a billionaire. I mean, Prince Charles is a billionaire. He could support them, there's no doubt.
In fact,
Harry will already be a multimillionaire himself through trust funds handed down to him.
It's not about money, we know that.
Well, it is about how they survive. You're absolutely right.
It's about fame. It's all about fame. And I, you know, she's not Princess Grace, is she? She's not.
Well, she thinks she is. This is the problem.
She's never going to be a head of state. And I don't know where she's got this idea from, but she's actually more important in the lineage than she thinks.
And then the woman who is going to be queen, who is Kate, of course, right? And I wonder if the heir and spare situation is getting to Harry, because his wife is saying, I didn't realise you weren't the most important member of the royal family young pack. She's probably just found out that she's never going to be queen anyway. But my prediction is, right, you've already given us a very good story in the start of this podcast about the car crash with your ex-husband and Dinah. But I want people to listen to this now. I don't think this marriage will last 3 years. And the reason I say that is because, A, I think she's finding it very uncomfortable. B, it's not all she thought it was going to be cracked up to be. She's never going to be queen. But C, I think she sees it as a great career opportunity to go back to what she did originally and make herself world famous in acting as well as a member of the British royal family.
Well, imagine the series that she could make.
Yes.
You know, as the cast-off, she will be the living Diana.
Yes.
So the wounded, get Martin Bashir on the case when he's not busy singing on The X Factor.
Yeah.
You know, get him back
Isn't
to do
ridiculous,
this. Well, no, not really. He's not a bad singer, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a serious journalist and X Factor.
Well, it's like. And if he can do it, we could have a go.
Yeah, but like all these politicians, right, the one I really hate is Ed Balls.
Balls
bloody nearly wrecked this country, right, when he was first Secretary of the Treasury with all his mad policies that he and Gordon Brown put together, ended up bankrupting the country, and then next minute wants us all to see him as a cuddly little bloke playing a piano on, Britain's Got Talent or something?
Well, he was on Strictly, wasn't he? Dancing away on Strictly.
Wasn't he on a celebrity show
as
well?
He's made himself a laughingstock.
A laughing
they
stock.
All turn into clown princes in the end, don't they?
Anyway, that's Martin Bashir and Ed Balls. We're getting back to Meghan. What do you think? You see, what really annoys me is, as well, we know more about it insider. So the average Joe in the street says, oh, leave them alone, leave them alone. This all started with Meghan turning a blind eye to her friends sending that letter to People magazine, which has a circulation in America of 37 million, biggest selling magazine in the world.
Did the friend send it, by the way? Or did she send it herself?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's a royal source. Who is the royal source? It always used to be Diana, of course. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Diana and Richard Kay, wasn't it?
Yeah, Diana and Richard Kay. Diana, by the way, had all the picture editors on speed dial on her phone wherever she went, and then complained about harassment from the paparazzi. Well, you invited them in all the time. So what I'm saying is, and where the royal family have gone wrong is how badly they handled Meghan's father. Because do you know Caroline Graham? West Coast, and I do as well. West Coast correspondent, Mail on Sunday. Any time the Mail on Sunday were short of a splash, Caroline, can you get down and see Meghan's dad? She'd get down there and she'd get a splash. It'd be a letter or a phone call or something like that.
That's a very interesting point there, because, you know, people are accusing the Mail on Sunday of having bought Thomas Markle.
Yes.
Oh, no, they didn't. The letter was given to Caroline Graham completely free and gratis.
It was.
Now, they didn't edit it to make Meghan look bad in any way.
No.
They took extracts, which he approved. So it was completely down to him. She wrote the letter to him in the first place.
That's right.
And if she's cutting off her own dad and not allowing him to come to her wedding,
yes,
not allowing him to have anything to do with his grandchild,
yes,
what's he going to do but reach out publicly by whichever means?
Well, you're absolutely right.
I feel sorry for him.
And of course, the full story is that the version of the letter that appeared in People magazine was critical of her father. So when Caroline Graham turned on the doorstep, he said, oh, I'm glad you've come, because that letter, which I've got here, by the way, they left out the bits in which I said how much I loved my daughter and how much I wanted to reunite with her.
All the Mail on Sunday did
was print the other version of the letter to make it a composite letter and not being selective. And now how they can possibly say that they're going to sue the Mail on Sunday, oh, bring it on. Another court case,
They will not win. But yeah, the thing they did wrong there, I mean, there are many, many things they've done wrong. Mm. They didn't consult other members of the royal family. They didn't seek advice from the palace. They went out on a limb, made this decision for themselves. So they've alienated themselves from the Queen and Prince Philip and from Charles and from William. Where is this going to end?
Yes, well, I totally agree. And all this about, oh, Harry's now under pressure, he's suffering with his mental health. And one of the things they say is that, of course, he was a serving, pilot in the Afghan War. Well, I don't have much time for Prince Andrew, actually. In fact, I often ask the question, what is the point of Prince Andrew? Like I ask the question, what is the point of Prince Edward, right? I know the point of Princess Anna, I know the point of Prince Charles. But when I say about Prince Andrew, I mean, as he gets older, he gets more like Ted Kennedy. You know, he just becomes less and less use in public life. He doesn't really want to do anything. He's obviously got the scandal involving Epstein, the paedophile.
Jeffrey Epstein,
absolutely. But the one thing you can say is that Andrew did actually serve as a fighting helicopter pilot in the Falklands War. He flew off the deck of one of the carriers, and he flew into the fire of the Argentinian missiles. That shadow of a doubt. Very brave, that. I mean, Harry signed up and he served and he went and he demanded that he was going to the battle line and the battle zone, but he never, from what I know, engaged in actual combat. You see what I mean?
He won't do now because he's retired.
Of course he won't.
All a bit token, isn't it?
It's a bit token, and also a lot of men who've gone out to Afghanistan had their legs blown off, so have had a lot more mental pressure than Harry, who would never have been in a position to get his legs blown off. What I'm saying is, how come all this concern for Harry only seems to have come since he got married? And that's why I think she, Meghan, without, being horrible to a young woman, I think she's brought all the pressure into his life. Even as we speak now, there are new reports every day, but one of them this morning was she's told friends she has revolutionised the royal family. What right has she got to tell anybody?
And they haven't done anyway. They've actually done it a great disservice. The royal family has lasted in this country for more than 1,000 years.
Absolutely, more than a millennium.
It's not going to be dented by a little chit from Hollywood who wants to ingratiate herself in this country. Well, she's forgotten that.
Yeah.
We're not on her side right now.
And that's why I don't think it can last. I'm not wishing them any harm at all. I think if all marriages lasted, the world would be a much better place. It'd be more stable. Children would feel better off brought up in homes that weren't broken, that kind of stuff. And I'm all for marriage, and I wish them every success. But we can contrast their marriage and their unison with that of William and Kate.
Can we, though?
Because when you look at Prince William, you look at a man who you think is so rock solidly family, children, all that kind of stuff. And particularly, mind you, you've only got to look at the track record of their father, haven't you?
Well, come on. I mean, yeah. And he was the one who said to Diana, who was his wife at the time, well, every Prince of Wales has had a mistress.
Yes.
So, why would that DNA swerve at any point? Why would that not remain constant?
In fact, he was quite indignant, wasn't he, Charles? Didn't he say, I hope you don't expect me to be the first Prince of Wales in 1,000 years not to have a mistress?
Yeah. With divine right.
It was a bit of a shame, that, wasn't it? The way that he was forced into that marriage with Diana. I mean, it was great for everybody who lived during that era. It's the most spectacular story, I think, you and I have ever been aware of in journalism, the overall story, culminating in Diana's very tragic
death. She played her part in that. I mean, he dated her sister, didn't he?
Yeah.
Lady Sarah McCorkadale.
Yes.
And Diana was saying, even as a young teenager,
I love Charles.
Yeah. I'm going to marry him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but
she was 19 when she married him. Far too young.
But also, once Once it was clear that Charles was never going to give up Camilla Parker Bowles, she then went on a rampant shagging policy, which we're still learning about, aren't we? And I'm not being disrespectful to Diana. I mean, I'm talking historically. You know, if we were talking now about Queen Elizabeth I, you see what I mean? We are talking about Diana, a very famous figure. But, I mean, her list of boyfriends is being added to all the time.
And we were sold the idea that she was a virgin bride.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think we've rewritten that now.
Have we?
Yes, I think
oh,
so.
Oh, really? I don't remember reading too much about boyfriends before
there
Charles.
There were at least two, and they were approached, and they've never talked, but they will.
Right, OK.
They will.
In fact, funny enough, I'm a great advocate of reading Times obituaries, right, and Telegraph obituaries and Guardian obituaries, and that might seem a bit maudlin, but it's not, because you learn about the lives of incredibly interesting people. And a lot of the time, I look to see if any of our old colleagues in Fleet Street have sadly passed
yeah.
away. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'll
kick the bucket,
something
yeah.
we can talk about in future podcasts. But what I'm saying is because you read these, I read the other day that the Asian heart surgeon has died.
Oh, Di's boyfriend?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
R.I.P. him.
Yeah, because he was the one. Apparently, she said she would move to Pakistan to live with, wasn't she?
Didn't she turn up at his door one time in an overcoat and opened it and was stark as underneath?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there at the time. But, I mean, I have heard those
stories
and all that. Well, I think there was him. Now, there was another guy who was an antiques dealer, Oliver Hoare.
Oh, yeah,
he used to get smuggled into Kensington Palace in the boot of her car.
The Hoare House, as they called it. Freddie Mercury's place that he bought, Garden Lodge,
yes.
down in Kensington.
Yes.
Used to belong to Oliver Hoare.
Really?
And so Freddie called that the Hoare House.
That's very funny. I can't believe it, yeah. So, I mean, look, what we're looking at here is such a, I just cannot see the Harry marriage lasting in its present form in this country. Do you see what I mean? Because if it does, then she's got what she secretly wants but claims she doesn't want, and that's a full page of pictures and words every day in every newspaper. And the only way she's going to get rid of that is to leave either the marriage or this country with Harry.
Well,
Harry can't move overseas.
That would be very sad, but watch this space.
Why does he want to go to Africa? I mean, look, I can see that...
She will not move to Africa.
Of course
I will
won't.
Put massive money on her never doing that. Mm. Even if they move to Cape Town, one of the most dangerous cities on earth.
Yeah, I agree.
They'd be surrounded by security the entire time. She would have no freedom,
yeah.
and there's no film industry or TV to speak of there.
That is absolutely true. And just to close this subject, one of the things that really got my goat was when she was interviewed by Tom Bradby, okay, who went out there to follow them around for the good work they were doing on the recent tour of South Africa, but actually managed to turn it into a fantastic insight into the royal marriage and to Harry and to Meghan. And she's standing there in front of a shanty town, talking about, nobody ever asked me how I am. And in the background, all these poverty-stricken kids walking past with no shoes on.
Yeah, going, what's a mattress?
Yes.
You know, which week can we have a glass of water?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And her sense of self-awareness definitely needs improving.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Delighted to say I have with me today Leslie Ann Jones, a formidable debater, and we've just been discussing the state of the royal family. Now, I tell you what I want to talk to you about, Leslie. I'm talking to you about a million things and all that kind of stuff. But have you ever heard of imposter syndrome?
Oh, yeah. I've
right?
had that.
Have you heard about
it for
this?
Years.
Sorry?
I've had that for years.
Well, how could
even
you possibly
before...
have that?
Okay,
you are
so
a top professional.
Recently
you're
given a name
high
to
achiever.
It.
First of all, explain to our millions of listeners, please, what is imposter syndrome?
So you are successful in your life and people do take note and acknowledge your achievements.
Yes.
In private,
yes.
in your own time, in your bed, all alone by yourself, you feel that you are not good enough in some way and that you've cheated your way to the top somehow.
Right.
You feel that you don't deserve the accolades that you're receiving.
Okay, and do you suffer from that?
I always have.
Truly?
Truly,
how can you?
When, truly.
Now, look, you know, when you were in your pomp in Fleet Street, you were one of the most sought-after writers by those in the rock industry. You were very successful. You were held in huge esteem by editors and picture editors and foreign editors and all that kind of stuff, and you achieved massively. How do you think you were an imposter?
I had a great conversation with Jill Dando about this once a long time ago.
Obviously, before she died.
And she said the same thing, and she had a little phrase for it. She said, right. I always feel that any minute I'm going to be found out.
Right.
And I said, I know exactly what you mean, because you sort of convince yourself that what you do is not really of value,
right.
It has no worth,
right.
And that actually you're getting away with it,
yeah.
Especially if you're paid a lot of money,
yeah.
Which we were in Fleet Street in those
days. Oh, absolutely,
to do what we did, and we were on gigantic expenses,
yes.
Getting on Concorde, staying in 5-star hotels,
that's right.
Living the life of.
But don't you think you earned that through sheer hard work and ability?
I mean, thousands
of young people in those days wanted that job in Fleet Street.
Yeah, they
when
did.
I applied for my job in Fleet Street, the first one, the Daily Express, 360 people applied for a job as a reporter on the Daily Express in Manchester. I was very, very proud of myself when I got that job, because that was the start of my career.
That you had? What was your spark that nobody else had?
Well, I luckily enough, the guy interviewing me was a Geordie, a guy called Stan Blenkinsop, right? He was the news editor of the Express in Manchester, and he saw some of the northern grit in me, I think, and I think he saw my determination. I think the killer question that got me the job was, he said, what will you do if you don't get this job? I said, I'll go to the Daily Mail and you'll regret not giving me this job in a year's time, because I'll be scooping you every day. And he chuckled and bought me another drink, because all the interviews always took place in the pub, by the way. That was another thing he used to do with those interviews. See how much you could drink and then get back to the office and see how far they could push you until you threw up over your typewriter. We had typewriters in those days. And at least two of them did.
The size of Fiat Uno.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. At least two of them did. But anyway, listen, in a minute, I'm going to give you the imposter syndrome quiz, okay?
Okay.
Because funny enough, for some unknown reason, people like yourself, you know, people who have been around for a long time, are suddenly taking interest in imposter syndrome because a new book's been written about it. But let me give you, if you don't mind, my drift on imposter syndrome, okay? My drift on imposter syndrome is that I have exactly the opposite. My syndrome is, why haven't you bloody well discovered me in a much, much bigger way than you did? Why am I not world famous? Why am I not headlining a show every day on radio and TV and in America? My hero is Piers Morgan, OK? Because Piers Morgan achieved all of that, right? And I wanted to achieve all of that. And if I've got any doubts about anything, it's my lack of achievement, not the fact that I have achieved and I can't understand why. I can't understand why I didn't do an awful lot better than I have.
Well, I can, because, OK, Simon Cowell gave Piers Morgan a massive leg up.
You're good for him!
And it takes for someone to see the spark in you that nobody else has discovered yet and to give you a leg up.
Yeah.
So all you've got to do is find yourself a Simon Cowell. Doesn't have to be him.
Too late now.
No, it isn't.
It is.
Why?
And there's very few Simon Cowells around. In fact, I'll say there's only one Simon Cowell. Now, the reason Piers got there was because he was doing Showbiz on the Sun, and Simon Cowell needed Piers to promote a lot of acts nobody ever heard of, including people like Take That and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Right place, right time. Right place, right time.
Your right place and right time will come.
Well, it's a bit too late. I'm 64 now.
Age has nothing to do with it.
It's only in the last 2 years that people have discovered I genuinely have a face for radio, okay?
He's got a beautiful face, listener.
That's very kind. So, in my view, whatever the opposite to imposter syndrome is, I suffer from it. Underachiever syndrome, perhaps, or something like that. I don't think I've necessarily underachieved, because I've done okay, had a few good jobs, you know, struck a few chords in places, but a mixture of ill health, because of course I was struck down with acute heart failure and then chronic diabetes, and my inability to be a great office politician. I'm a hopeless office politician. If people are messing me around, right, I simply just tell them, you know, I just say, I'm not doing that, or you're not doing that, or I'm not having that, bang, slam the door and all that kind of stuff. How did you get on with office politics?
Well, I wasn't in the office enough. And I think in those days we had a thing on Fleet Street, wasn't it? That if you were in the office, you weren't out there doing the job. And the whole thing about doing the job was to be out there, getting stories or being on a story or whatever else. So I wasn't ever in the office very much.
I took sort of executive responsibility for things.
You were an editor, weren't you?
Well, I like leading from the front.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I'm going to talk to you over the next couple of podcasts about the Mrs. Thatcher book, okay? The third volume, which has come out, Charles Moore is the writer. And I've read all the reviews of it, you know, I haven't read the book yet. But the one thing which is so obvious is she could not handle not being in charge. I mean, it drove her to dementia eventually, because she'd wake up in the morning, listen to Radio 4, and no, it's all wrong, start making notes and hand them to an assistant, say, get that to the Foreign Office. You know, of course, nobody acted on it anymore. And it happened to me when I had to step down as the programme director of a radio station, Talk Sport, because of acute heart failure. When I got out of hospital eventually after 7 months, I couldn't handle not being in charge. It was very, very difficult, honestly.
Well, a leader is a leader. I mean, look how David Cameron said when he resigned as Prime Minister, and he wasn't going to go to the backbenches.
Yes.
He was going to leave politics.
Yes.
Theresa May, completely the opposite.
That's right,
you know, she has remained the Member of Parliament for her constituency.
That's right, down in Kent, isn't it?
She's wherever it is, she's still stuck in there.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and she obviously didn't quite have those leadership qualities.
No, I agree with all that. It is very, very difficult. When people would ring me up afterwards, and I went back into broadcasting, obviously, because I used to be both. I used to do the breakfast show and I was programme director, and then programme director went and then the breakfast show went because of my long absence, and then I was in different slots. I found it very, very difficult, and I've rowed with people ever since, because I don't think anybody has ever done the job as well as I did, and that's another sign of my opposite to imposter syndrome.
Well,
I think it should be leadership
syndrome. They get it because there is now a name for it.
Yep.
Like everything else, you know, as soon as there's a name for it, people suffer from it.
Yes.
Well, you know, what did people have pre-Dr. Asperger delivering that syndrome into this country in English?
Really?
The man who translated Dr. Asperger's original paper
from
the German
into
the English.
Well, we didn't know about it until then.
No, not until the early 1900s.
Golly, I don't know that.
So what did people have? You know,
I've no idea. I mean, what did soldiers who came out of the First World War have? As evidence.
Well, they got shot, didn't they?
Well, they got blown up and all that. And then they... Yes, you're absolutely right. And then if they couldn't go back into war because they were literally... Their nervous system had been smashed to pieces, they were tied to a pole and shot for cowardice. It was even worse in the Napoleonic Wars, right? The expression, up the creek without a paddle, comes from a hospital in Portsmouth, near where I live, called Halsager Hospital. And it's a naval hospital. And they would bring the soldiers back from the Napoleonic Wars, put them in this hospital, and then literally patch them up, give them wooden legs if their legs had been blown off, and you know, if half of their face had been blown off, you know, they'd put tar across their face and all this kind of stuff. And then they were sent back into battle, because that's why we had to have press gangs, because no man in his right mind would volunteer to go onto a wooden boat where cannonballs came smashing through the side and could knock you into 1,000 pieces, right? At Halsager, the only way to get out was to go to the lavatory and climb down the pipes out of the lavatory into Halsager Creek below. And if you got into the creek, you were stuck because you couldn't get out again. And that's where the expression, up the creek without a paddle, came from, OK?
Well, I suppose you could unscrew your wooden leg and use that as a paddle.
No, the wooden leg was cemented to your other leg with tar and all this kind of stuff.
God.
You know what I mean?
But
anyway, now it's time for the imposter syndrome quiz, OK? We've explored the theory.
Sleeves up. I'm ready to roll.
Right, here we go. Right. Question number one. How hard do you find it to accept praise?
I've learned to accept praise. It's like accepting a compliment, isn't it? I have taught myself to say, thank you very much, instead of going that old thing, or, I don't look nice. I'd always make some excuse, but now I've taught myself to say thank you very much.
Okay, so you've accepted that. Right. Yeah. Number two, when you do something well, how likely are you to dismiss it, i.e. by saying, to your friends who praise you, oh, no, really, anybody could have done it?
I say that to my friends and members of my family, but professionally, I feel if I've created something, if I'm not proud of it and think this has integrity, then I shouldn't be foisting this on anybody else. Mm. So I have to be happy with my work before I put it out there.
Okay. Question three. When you do something well, how likely are you to attribute this to sheer luck?
A little bit, yeah.
But isn't there a private and a public way of doing that?
Yeah,
can't you
there
say
is.
Private, and then but then you want to be modest and say, oh, it was just a stroke of luck. I never say it's a stroke of luck. I say it's because I'm bloody good.
I do quote Jack Nicklaus quite a lot, and I think he probably didn't coin the phrase, but it is the harder I work, the luckier I get.
It was Gary Player.
There you go.
Yeah.
I knew it was a golfer.
Yeah, it was a golfer. He said, I remember seeing him in Cape Town when we did the World Cup there in 2010, and he repeated the phrase, funny thing is, the harder I practice, the luckier I get. Do you know what? He's also a bit of a nutter, Gary Player, because the other thing he does is, he said he's always boasting about his physical, you know, well-being and all that. And he said, see these trousers, gentlemen? I've had these trousers for 40 years. Now, what he was trying to say was he hasn't put an ounce on in 40 years. Of course, we all took the piss out of him and said, well, can you afford a new pair of trousers after 40 years and all that? But the strangest thing he does is he walks around with a slice of bacon in his pocket of his jacket. And whenever we were sitting down for a drink, he never drinks alcohol, he would order two glasses of water, one for himself. But the other one, he would take out his rasher of bacon and he'd unwrap the cling film off it and put the bacon in the glass. And after 10 minutes, he would say, and what had happened is all the salt and all the grease and everything would come out of the bacon, so that the glass of water that was is now a glass of goo. Hiding the bacon in because it turns like green, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But apparently he does this all the time.
What for?
Well, just to try and say to you, you know, you're all poisoning your bodies. He's like a vegetarian. He doesn't take alcohol. He's never smoked, all that kind of stuff. Fitness fanatic. Does about 1,000 press-ups a day and all that kind of stuff. But that's...
If he put the bacon in a glass of gin,
yes,
that would make sense to me. But
I don't know. I don't know. Right, here we go. Next question, please, in the imposter syndrome quiz. Leslie and Jones in the chair. When you perform poorly, how likely are you to attribute the poor performance to your lack of skill or not working hard enough, what we've just been talking about?
Oh, I would agonise over it. I hate it when things go wrong, and I would go home and lose sleep for days over it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and it would be my fault. It would be me completely who was...
Yeah, you know, if you become an alcoholic, and fortunately you and I have just stopped short of that during our journalistic careers... Hopefully.
There's always time.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I worked very closely with Paul Merson, the footballer. You know, he had all sorts of problems, including alcoholism, including, like, chronic gambling syndrome, including the fact that he was stuffing cocaine up his nose.
Those kinds are usually the womanizers as well.
I mean, he didn't so much have that problem, but on four separate nights, Paul was going to marriage guidance, because he'd obviously wrecked his marriage with his dreadful behaviour, Alcoholics Anonymous, Gambling Anonymous, and a drug clinic to get off. That was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And on Friday he went to the pub.
Well, eventually he did. He went back on it. But great guy, Paul, and I liked him very much, and he tried very hard to turn his life around, which he largely has done. But anyway, what I was going to say is that part of the 12 steps is, I think it's the first one or the second one, you have to say to yourself, when something goes wrong, if you had no control over it, there is nothing I can do about that or could have done about that situation. I must not berate myself for it. You see what I mean? I mean, do you feel like that?
Bit of a cop-out. If I haven't done something well enough, that's my fault.
Yes.
So I'm not going to say, well, I'm not going to blame myself for that or berate myself for that. Actually, I'm going to beat myself up.
Yes.
And I'm going to do it better next time.
Last time I beat myself up on that, right, I was at the Edinburgh Festival doing a show there. And they go on very late sometimes, till 2 a.m, you know. And the following morning, I must have left my phone on silent. And I only realised after I came out of the shower, I'd been called by a radio station. I think it was Radio 2. And they wanted me to give them a view on Greta Thunberg. And I have very strong views on Greta Thunberg, the way I think the poor little girl's been manipulated
totally.
By...
Totally. She's a puppet.
Absolutely. So I rang back. I knew I'd probably lost it because these bookers don't hang around. You know, they've got
somebody else.
Of course they do. Right, they'll knock out four numbers until they get somebody instantly says, yes, I can do it, you know. So I got straight back to them, my worst fears, and I said, look, I'm awfully sorry. I was in the shower. I said, but you've probably got, yes, we have. Thanks, Mike, and all that. And, you know, I beat myself up all day for not taking my phone into the shower, you know what I mean? And not making sure it was on noise. I beat myself up all day.
Yeah, that's mental. You've got to have a shower, you've got to have a wash.
No.
You know, there are going to be things that you miss.
That's what I mean. But if it is the alcoholic plan, what you have to do is you have to say, do not beat yourself up for things you could not control. But I could have controlled that better. I could have made sure that the volume was on my phone. I should have taken it into the shower with me. Anyway, listen, let's move on to your next question. Here we go. When you do something poorly, Is it rare you will attribute your failure to other people, i.e. pass it off, it wasn't my fault?
Oh, very rare. It's almost always
so
my fault.
So you like
fault.
Taking the blame, do you?
I don't like it. It's the way I was brought up.
Yes.
I'm the eldest of four.
Right.
And everything was my fault growing up. You know, I had to take the blame for lots of things my siblings did wrong. My brother used to steal my mother's cigarettes out of her handbag.
What?
I've never had a cigarette in my life, not even a puff of one.
Right.
But I used to have to take the blame for my brother's thieving of my mum's
No.
first. So I'm used to taking the blame, really.
Golly.
Yeah, I probably need therapy.
Well, I don't think you need therapy, but I mean, are you the eldest sister? Are you the eldest child?
The eldest child of four and the eldest sister of three.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. Well, I'm the middle, you see. I've got an older sister, younger sister.
Middle child syndrome.
So I'm both elder brother and little brother to my sisters, you see what I mean? But no, I know what you mean. Okay, well, that's a good insight. Question number six. How important is success for you?
Hugely important.
Yep.
It drives everything I do.
Good.
But not success for no sake, for the sake of success. The same as not money for money's sake. It has to be good work.
Right.
I have to feel that every book I write is an improvement on the previous one.
On the previous one. Yeah. Okay, great. Right, next question. How likely are you to focus on what you have not done well rather than to celebrate what you have done well?
I think I have it in the balance now. I think I'm about equal.
So you live with your mistakes and you don't over-celebrate your successes.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Question number eight. How important is it to you to find a hero to befriend and impress? That's good. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means like a bezzy mate or a best friend or maybe a colleague you admire enormously. Do you need one of those people in your
life? When I was young, I really did. And I had lots of heroes.
Really?
David Bowie was my first hero.
Right.
And I stalked him.
That's quite a, you know, very impressive choice.
Yeah,
yes,
when I was 11, I used to go around his house after school.
Really?
I literally stalked him.
Where was that?
In Beckenham in Kent.
Really?
And I used to wait outside his place, Haddon Hall.
Yeah.
And knock on the door with my friends.
So did you eventually get to know him professionally because you grew up near him or because you were in the rock
because
writing business?
Because he was my hero when I was a child.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And because of him, I became a journalist.
Was he Ziggy Stardust when you first got
to
know him?
No, he was still David Jones. And because we had shared a surname.
Of course you did, yeah.
So, and he had us in for tea and he was just so impressive. And I knew I had to grow up and be with people
Fabuloso.
Like him.
He ended up lending you his home in, was it?
Mustique.
Mystique, didn't he, to write a book? Yeah,
he
how
did.
Very nice. Right. Right, okay, next question. How often do you feel afraid to express your views unless people discover your lack of knowledge? So this is really a big thing in your job and I. If you're on a chat show or something like that, you express a point of view. Are you always confident in your own view?
I am now. I think there were times in the past when I felt slightly disadvantaged at times because I had a specialist subject, which is music, rock music, pop music, entertainment.
Yeah.
Outside of that, when I was younger, I wasn't that interested in sport or politics or current affairs.
Yes.
Now I'm naturally much more interested in those subjects.
Right.
And I absorb the same as you do. You know, we watch stuff, we read stuff, we know what's going on.
Sure, I do as well.
And I always feel like I have a very strong opinion about whatever it is.
Well, you can't have a strong opinion unless you're confident you've got your facts in order. And some people laugh at me. If I do a show on Monday morning, a chat show on Monday morning, I'm out of circulation on Sunday because you know that most of what's in the Sunday papers is up for grabs on a Monday morning chat show. And I've got to get across everything.
Yeah,
because
you're filling your head with all that.
If I go to bed on a Sunday night and I haven't done my homework, I don't sleep. You know, you've got to be able to get up and know that you can face it.
But look how well informed you are and what a great conversationalist you are.
Well, you have to be or else they wouldn't have you back. That's the thing.
There you go.
Because remember, you have to be a jack of all trades, whereas the other two people that I'm usually working with are specialists in one form or another, like, for instance, politics or something like that. Right, next question. We'll just rattle through these now. How often do you find yourself unable to start a project for fear of failure?
Never.
I would say that, knowing you all these years and you decide you've got a book project, you're going to make it happen, you're going to write a memoir, you're going to get something up on stage, you're going to get, you know, a series into a newspaper. So I can definitely vouch for that.
Thank you. Sleeves up. Get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Last couple of questions. How often are you unwilling to finish a project because it hasn't gone well enough?
Never. I can never start something and not finish it.
Same with me. I totally agree. And you get to the end and then you feel, well, I'm glad I did it. And then your life's work then is to try and enforce it and make it work. I totally agree. Right, how often do you find yourself thinking you're a fraud? It's a strange question in the imposter syndrome quiz.
It's the same thing as being an imposter.
Of course it is.
Yeah, I do suffer from that occasionally.
Well,
but
I think we've answered that one. I think we've answered that fully. Right, how worried are you that your lack of skill or talent or ability will be uncovered?
I can only do one thing, really, can't I?
So communicate, really.
I do that one thing to the best of my ability.
And I think you do it very well.
And hope that I get away with it.
Absolutely. And the final question here in this quiz, it's the imposter syndrome quiz, and Leslie Ann Jones is in the chair. Final question, how important is validation from others to your life?
It's less important than it was when I was younger.
Right.
Because I have more confidence in myself and my ability.
Yeah.
But it's still important.
Yeah.
Especially among peers. We like our peers to appreciate what we do.
Yes, sure. Okay.
You know, not just that peers, but peers.
Yes, I know what you mean, yeah. If I was to answer that question, I would say that there are two forms of management. I was subject to the very worst one in my early part of my career, where people scream and shout at you and call you all sorts of names, and that's how they thought they could motivate you.
Mm-hmm.
I've switched completely the other way. I now think praise is a much, much better way of getting the best out of people than constant attacks. And when I stood down as program director at TalkSport, I'd told everybody all the time how good they were. Of course, you had to take people up and tell them it wasn't working and you had to go. But most of the time, I want to encourage people. From the day I stepped down, nobody ever said an encouraging word to me for 15 years because they didn't want to, because unfortunately I'd been the boss before and they weren't going to open the door again.
Bastards. My kids call me butt woman.
Right.
Because I always say to them, you know, we're in an email or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Such and such was so wonderful, darling.
Mm.
But, and then here comes the thing that I want to have a go about.
Yes.
So they know what's coming when I start an email with something really lovely.
But at least you don't start it by saying, you know, what on earth were you thinking of when? That's the very worst thing is to start with criticism.
Positive, then a negative.
Absolutely. Leslie Ann, thank you again. Thank you very much once again for joining me here on Planet Porky. And just to let the folks know, you will be hearing us again very soon. Thank you for joining us on Planet Porky.
She will be the living Diana.
Yes.
So the wounded, get Martin Bashir on the case when he's not busy singing on The X Factor.
Yeah.
You know, get him back to do
that. Ridiculous.
Well, no, not really. He's not a bad singer, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a serious journalist and X Factor.
Well,
it's like...
And if he can do it, we could have a go.
Yeah, but like all these politicians, right, the one I really hate is Ed Balls.
Dancing.
Ed Balls bloody nearly wrecked this country, right, when he was first Secretary of the Treasury with all his mad policies that he and Gordon Brown put together, ended up bankrupting the country, and then next minute wants us all to see him as a cuddly little bloke playing a piano on Britain's Got Talent or something.
Well, he was on Strictly, wasn't he? Dancing away on Strictly.
Wasn't he on a celebrity show
as
well?
He's made himself a laughing stock.
A laughing
stock.
They
all turn into clown princes in the end, don't they?
Anyway, that's Martin Bashir and Ed Balls. We're getting back to Meghan. Why am I not world famous? Why am I not headlining a show every day on radio and TV and in America? My hero is Piers Morgan, OK? Because Piers Morgan achieved all of that, right? And I wanted to achieve all of that. And if I've got any doubts about anything, it's my lack of achievement, not the fact that I have achieved and I can't understand why. I can't understand why I didn't do an awful lot better than I have.
Didn't she turn up at his door one time in an overcoat and opened it and was stark as underneath?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there at the time.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.